Chapter 3. Mrs. Lurper, and that's one of them all round it, and many is the little ruffle in my mind, that the major has smoothed, for he is a clever man who has seen much. Dear, dear, 13 years have passed, though it seems, but yesterday since I was sitting with my glasses on at the open front parlor window one evening in August, the parlors being then vacant, reading yesterday's paper my eyes for print being poor, though still I am thankful, to say a long sight at a distance, when I hear a gentleman come posting across the road, and up the street in a dreadful rage talking to himself in a fury and ding and king somebody. By George, says he out loud and clutching his walking stick, I'll go to Mrs. Lurper's. Which is Mrs. Lurper's. Then looking round and seeing me, he flourishes his hat right off his head, as if I had been the queen, and he says, excuse the intrusion, madam, but pray, madam, can you tell me at what number in this street there resides a well-known and much respected lady by the name of Lurper? A little flustered, though I must say gratified, I took off my glasses and courtesied and said, sir, Mrs. Lurper is your humble servant. Astonishing, says he. A million pardons. Madam, may I ask you to have the kindness to direct one of your domestics to open the door to a gentleman in search of apartments by the name of Jackman? I had never heard the name, but a politer gentleman I never hoped to see, for says he, madam, I am shocked at your opening the door yourself to no worthier a fellow than Jemmy Jackman. After you, madam. I never precede a lady. Then he comes into the parlors and he sniffs, and he says, ah, these are parlors. Not moldy cupboards, he says, but parlors, and no smell of coal sacks. Now, my dear, it having been remarked by some inimical to the whole neighborhood, that it always smells of coal sacks, which might prove a drawback to lodgers if encouraged, I says to the major gently, though firmly, that I think he is referring to Arundel or Surrey or Howard, but not Norfolk. Madam, says he, I refer to Wozenham's lower down over the way, madam, you can form no notion what Wozenham's is, madam, it is a vast coal sack, and Miss Wozenham has the principles and manners of a female heaver, madam, from the manner in which I have heard her mention you, I know she has no appreciation of a lady, and from the manner in which she has conducted herself towards me, I know she has no appreciation of a gentleman, madam, my name is Jackman, should you require any other reference than what I have already said, I name the Bank of England, perhaps you know it. Such was the beginning of the major's occupying the parlors, and from that hour to this the same, and a most obliging lodger and punctual in all respects except one irregular, which I need not particularly specify, but made up for by his being a protection, and at all times ready to fill in the papers of the assessed taxes and juries and that, and once collared a young man with the drawing-room clock under his coat, and once on the parapets with his own hands and blankets put out the kitchen chimney, and afterwards attending the summons made a most eloquent speech against the parish before the magistrates, and saved the engine, and ever quite the gentleman though passionate. And certainly Miss Wozenham's detaining the trunks and umbrella was not in a liberal spirit, though it may have been according to her rights in law, or an act I would myself have stooped to, the major being so much the gentleman, that though he is far from tall he seems, almost so when he has his shirt frill out, and his frock coat on and his hat with the curly brims, and in what service he was I cannot truly tell you, my dear, whether militia or foreign, for I never heard him even name himself as major, but always simple Jemmy Jackman, and once soon after he came when I felt it my duty, to let him know that Miss Wozenham had put it about that he was no major, and I took the liberty of adding which you are, sir, his words were, madam, at any rate I am not a minor, and sufficient for the day is the evil thereof which cannot be denied to be the sacred truth, nor yet his military ways of having his boots with only the dirt brushed off taken to him in the front parlor every morning on a clean plate and varnishing them himself with a little sponge, and a saucer and a whistle in a whisper so sure as ever his breakfast is ended, and so neat his ways, that it never soils his linen which is scrupulous, though more in quality than quantity, neither that nor his mustachios, which to the best of my belief, are done at the same time, and which are as black and shining as his boots, his head of hair being a lovely white. It was the third year nearly above the majors, being in the parlors, that early one morning in the month of February, when Parliament was coming on, and you may therefore suppose a number of impostors were about ready to take hold of anything they could get, a gentleman and a lady from the country came into view the second, and I well remember that I had been looking out of window, and had watched them, and the heavy sleet driving down the street together looking for bills. I did not quite take to the face of the gentleman, though he was good-looking too, but the lady was a very pretty young thing and delicate, and it seemed too rough for her to be out at all, though she had only come from the Adelphi Hotel, which would not have been much above a quarter of a mile, if the weather had been less severe. Now it did so happen, my dear, that I had been forced to put 5 shillings weekly additional on the second in consequence of a loss from running away full dressed, as if going out to a dinner party, which was very artful, and had made me rather suspicious taking it along with Parliament. So when the gentleman proposed 3 months certain, and the money in advance and leave then reserved to renew on the same terms for 6 months more, I says I was not quite certain, but that I might have engaged myself to another party, but would step downstairs and look into it, if they would take a seat. They took a seat, and I went down to the handle of the major's door, that I had already began to consult, finding it a great blessing, and I knew by his whistling in a whisper, that he was varnishing his boots, which was generally considered private. However, he kindly calls out, "If it's you, madam, come in," and I went in and told him. "Well, madam," says the major, rubbing his nose as I did fear at the moment with the black sponge, but it was only his knuckle, he being always neat and dexterous with his fingers, "well, madam, I suppose you would be glad of the money?" I was delicate of saying yes to out, for a little extra color rose into the major's cheeks, and there was irregularity which I will not particularly specify in a quarter which I will not name. "I am of opinion, madam," says the major, "that when money is ready for you, when it is ready for you, Mrs. Lerper, you ought to take it. What is there against it, madam, in this case upstairs?" "I really cannot say there is anything against it, sir, still I thought I would consult you. You said a newly married couple, I think, madam?" says the major. I says yes, evidently. And indeed the young lady mentioned to me in a casual way that she had not been married many months. The major rubbed his nose again, and stirred the varnish round and round in its little saucer with his piece of sponge, and took to his whistling in a whisper for a few moments. Then he says, "You would call it a good let, madam?" "Oh, certainly a good let, sir. Say they renew for the additional 6 months. Would it put you about very much, madam, if the worst was to come to the worst?" said the major. "Well, I hardly know," I says to the major. "It depends upon circumstances. Would you object, sir, for instance?" "I?" says the major. "Object? Jemmy Jackman? Mrs. Lerper close with the proposal." So I went upstairs and accepted, and they came in next day, which was Saturday, and the major was so good as to draw up a memorandum of an agreement in a beautiful round hand and expressions that sounded to me equally legal and military, and Mr. Edson signed it on the Monday morning, and the major called upon Mr. Edson on the Tuesday, and Mr. Edson called upon the major on the Wednesday, and the second and the parlors were as friendly as could be wished. The 3 months paid for had run out, and we had got without any fresh overtures as to payment into May, my dear, when there came an obligation upon Mr. Edson to go a business expedition right across the Isle of Man, which fell quite unexpected upon that pretty little thing, and is not a place that, according to my views, is particularly in the way to anywhere at any time, but that may be a matter of opinion. so sure they know this was it, that he was to go next day, and dreadfully she cried, poor pretty, and I am sure I cried too, when I saw her on the cold pavement in the sharp east wind, it being a very backward spring, that ear taking a last leave of him with her pretty bright hair blowing this way, and that and her arms clinging round his neck and him saying, there, there, there. Now let me go, Peggy. And by that time it was plain that what the major had been so accommodating as to say he would not object to happening in the house would happen in it, and I told her as much when he was gone while I comforted her with my arm up the staircase, for I says you will soon have others to keep up for my pretty, and you must think of that. His letter never came when it ought to have come, and what she went through morning after morning when the postman brought none for her, the very postman himself compassionated, when she ran down to the door, and yet we cannot wonder at its being calculated to blunt the feelings, to have all the trouble of other people's letters, and none of the pleasure, and doing it oftener in the mud and mizzle than not, and at a rate of wages more resembling Little Britain than Great. But at last one morning when she was too poorly to come running downstairs, he says to me with a pleased look in his face that made me next to love the man in his uniform coat, though he was dripping wet, I have taken you first in the street this morning, Mrs. Lurper, for here's the one for Mrs. Edson. I went up to her bedroom with it as fast as ever I could go, and she sat up in bed when she saw it, and kissed it, and tore it open, and then a blank stare came upon her. It's very short, she says, lifting her large eyes to my face. Oh, Mrs. Lurper, it's very short. I says, my dear Mrs. Edson, no doubt that's because your husband hadn't time to write more just at that time. No doubt, no doubt, says she, and puts her two hands on her face, and turns round in her bed. I shut her softly in, and I crept downstairs and I tapped at the major's door, and when the major, having his thin slices of bacon in his own Dutch oven, saw me, he came out of his chair, and put me down on the sofa. Hush, says he, I see something's the matter. Don't speak, take time. I says, oh, Major, I'm afraid there's cruel work upstairs. Yes, yes, says he, I had begun to be afraid of it, take time. And then in opposition to his own words he rages out frightfully, and says, I shall never forgive myself, madam, that I, Jemmy Jackman, didn't see it all that morning, didn't go straight upstairs, when my boot sponge was in my hand, didn't force it down his throat, and choke him dead with it on the spot. The Major and me agreed, when we came to ourselves, that just at present we could do no more than take on to suspect nothing and use our best endeavors to keep that poor young creature quiet, and what I ever should have done without the Major, when it got about among the organ men, that quiet was our object is unknown, for he made lion and tiger war upon them to that degree, that without seeing it, I could not have believed it was in any gentleman to have such a power of bursting out with fire irons, walking sticks, water jugs, coals, potatoes off his table, the very hat off his head, and at the same time, so furious in foreign languages that they would stand with their handles half turned fixed like the sleeping ugly, for I cannot say beauty. Ever to see the postman come near the house now gave me such I fear, that it was a reprieve when he went by, but in about another 10 days, or a fortnight, he says again, here's one for Mrs. Edson. Is she pretty well? She is pretty well, postman, but not well enough to rise so early as she used, which was so far gospel truth. I carried the letter into the Major at his breakfast, and I says, tottering Major, I have not the courage to take it up to her. It's an ill-looking villain of a letter, says the Major. I have not the courage, Major, I says again in a tremble, to take it up to her. After seeming lost in consideration for some moments, the Major says, raising his head, as if something new and useful had occurred to his mind, Mrs. Lurper, I shall never forgive myself that I, Jemmy Jackman, didn't go straight upstairs that morning when my boot sponge was in my hand, and force it down his throat, and choke him dead with it. Major, I says, a little hasty, you didn't do it, which is a blessing, for it would have done no good, and I think your sponge was better employed on your own honorable boots. So we got to be rational, and planned that I should tap at her bedroom door, and lay the letter on the mat outside and wait on the upper landing for what might happen. And never was gunpowder, cannonballs or shells or rockets more dreaded than that dreadful letter was by me as I took it to the second floor. A terrible loud scream sounded through the house the minute after she had opened it, and I found her on the floor lying, as if her life was gone. My dear, I never looked at the face of the letter which was lying open by her, for there was no occasion. Everything I needed to bring her round the major brought up with his own hands, besides running out to the chemist's for what was not in the house, and likewise having the fiercest of all his many skirmishes with a musical instrument representing a ballroom I do not know in what particular country and company waltzing in, and out at folding doors with rolling eyes. When after a long time I saw her coming to, I slipped on the landing till I heard her cry, and then I went in, and says cheerily, "Mrs. Edson, you're not well, my dear, and it's not to be wondered at," as if I had not been in before. Whether she believed or disbelieved I cannot say, and it would signify nothing if I could, but I stayed by her for hours, and then she, God ever blesses me, and says she will try to rest for her head is bad. "Major," I whispers, looking in at the parlors, "I beg and pray of you don't go out." The major whispers, "Madam, trust me, I will do no such a thing. How is she?" I says, "Major, the good Lord above us only knows what burns and rages in her poor mind. I left her sitting at her window. I am going to sit at mine." It came on afternoon, and it came on evening. Norfolk is a delightful street to lodge in, provided you don't go lower down but of a summer evening, when the dust and waste paper lie in it, and stray children play in it, and a kind of a gritty calm and bake settles on it, and a peal of church bells is practicing in the neighborhood. It is a trifle dull, and never have I seen it since at such a time, and never shall I see it evermore at such a time without seeing the dull June evening, when that forlorn young creature sat at her open corner window on the second, and me at my open corner window the other corner on the third. Something merciful, something wiser and better far than my own self, had moved me, while it was yet light, to sit in my bonnet and shawl, and as the shadows fell, and the tide rose, I could sometimes, when I put out my head, and looked at her window below, see that she leaned out a little looking down the street. It was just settling dark when I saw her in the street. So fearful of losing sight of her, that it almost stops my breath while I tell it, I went downstairs faster than I ever moved in all my life, and only tapped with my hand at the major's door in passing it and slipping out. She was gone already. I made the same speed down the street, and when I came to the corner of Howard Street I saw that she had turned it, and was there plain before me going towards the west. Oh, with what a thankful heart I saw her going along! She was quite unacquainted with London, and had very seldom been out for more than an airing in our own street, where she knew two or three little children belonging to neighbors, and had sometimes stood among them at the street looking at the water. She must be going at hazard, I knew, still she kept the by streets quite correctly, as long as they would serve her, and then turned up into the Strand. But at every corner I could see her head turned one. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.